Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast, show number 65. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
So it's Saturday morning, which is a little bit different for us. It's a beautiful, beautiful Saturday morning, isn't it, Gretchen?
It's going to be 80 here in Dallas today.
Yeah.
Everything's blooming. It's really pretty.
It's really pretty. So if you do hear some lawn mowing going on in the background... My lawn guys might even be here, so that would be really intrusive. But
and probably the cleaning lady. Isn't she coming?
No, she's not coming today.
Oh, not coming today. Okay.
Nope.
Mr. Jeff.
She doesn't say Mr. Jeff. She just says, hey, asshole.
Why are you so messy? You live alone.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I come here, it's like a hurricane hit the house. What the hell did you do? So that's a little crazy.
Yeah.
Life is crazy.
No, not really.
No, it's really not?
Nah.
How's your life going? How's your personal life? Share something with the thousands of people listening.
Oh, I'm getting LASIK.
Wow.
Yeah, so
yeah, you
we'll
told
see
me
how
about
that goes.
So if they messed up with the laser and...
I guess I'll be blind.
What if they lobotomized some of your brain? Would you be bummed? Or would you really care?
Well, it depends what part, you know?
Exactly.
There are certain parts they could probably take.
But. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm doing it. Everybody I've talked to has had a pretty good experience, except one person. My cousin had a bad experience, but...
How long ago did your cousin have it done?
A couple years.
Okay.
But I've talked to people who've had it done even longer than that and even more recently. So it sounds pretty interesting. It takes about like a minute per eye. I mean, it's really quick. So it's surprising. There's a lot of prep leading up to that, but the actual laser part of it itself is really quick.
Cool.
So we'll see what it's going to be like. So I'll have, probably by the time we do the next podcast, I will have had it done.
And really?
Maybe I can take the glasses off. I'm so excited.
How long will you be able to, how long is the recovery time for that?
Oh, the next day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Actually, you can see it. You can see really clearly instantly.
Cool.
So, yeah, but the next day you can actually start reading again, I think.
Very good.
So we had some calls, Jeff.
Oh, we had one call. We had one call from a very special person. Did we have more than one call?
Or maybe I just listened to the one previously.
The one left. Gretchen's very behind.
Oh, gosh. Well, yes. Jeff's Jeff's biggest fan.
My biggest fan.
Your biggest fan.
I'm going to go ahead and play that right now.
I love your podcast. You guys, wait, I got to get the script. What was I supposed to say, Jeff? You guys are so talented. Yes, indeed you are. This is your mom, and cut this out if you broadcast it. But I've been bothered by your podcast and the guy with the picnic table, the metal picnic table specifically. Coming from the Midwest where it's still cold, or even knowing when I reach into the refrigerator for ice cubes with damp hands, it just freaks me out to think about this guy in his backyard and the metal picnic table. It's keeping me awake at night, bothering me. So I hope you'll give me a resolution and tell me it isn't as bad as my imagination says it is. Goodbye.
Did you ever find out? Was the bench cold when the picnic table cold when he was doing his thing?
I don't know the guy. I didn't ask him. I have no idea. But anyway, if you do want to call in, we'll play your phone call. And it doesn't always have to be mom. 206-333-1003. That number again. 206-333-1003. It's Sunday.
He's selling cars now on the side.
Yeah. You know, you ever heard that ad? Sunday. Uh-huh. See the Reds, you know. I remember that since I was a kid. I think they still do that, you know, for like car derbies and, and I don't know even what they're called.
Oh, yeah. Monster truck rallies.
Monster truck rallies, yeah. I should know. I mean, I go every week. We should take this podcast on the road and go to a
monster truck rally,
you know, make our comments.
Oh, wow.
You'd see a lot of your people there. Well, I have some very disturbing news.
There's a lot of disturbing news.
Yeah, there is really. Yeah, this is going to be the disturbing podcast. You're full up of disturbing stuff, too?
it's just sort of a gloomy time right now. I think there's not a lot of positive stuff out.
Not outside. Well, the Pope is here, though.
The Pope is here.
That warms the cockles of my heart.
Well, he's digging up the past, trying to make amends for the sex abuse.
Yeah, I heard he met, yesterday with a group of victims.
Victims, yep.
So, good for him. You know, I mean, hey. But who is it?
Critics are saying he's not doing enough.
Did you see Bill Maher last night?
Oh, no.
I won't give him too much away, but he did make the comment. He said, if there was a CEO who was in charge of a company where all their officers were abusing kids, he would be fired and put into jail.
Yes.
Now, it's not exactly a fair comparison, but there's something to the metaphor.
Well, there was a $2 billion write-down for this little issue. Well, not little, but... cost them $2 billion.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Some of the priests are in jail.
I think you're
some
right.
Some of them are serving time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But I think his point was the leadership.
The leadership should have been
sort of, getting away with stuff. And maybe it's not at the Pope level. Maybe it's at more of a senior management. What is that, bishop or cardinal level? Yeah, yeah.
No.
So, anyway, I guess the Pope is here. You know, he always... It seems to me, I mean, it's always a goodwill kind of thing when the Pope comes. It seems to me, and maybe this is just my sensibilities as getting to be more older and cynical, but it seems to me that there's less pomp and circumstance around the thing. It was like, okay, the Pope's here, that's cool. And it's just sort of one of the news items, but before it was such a big deal, or am I just being filtered by some...
Something I think it
else.
Is a big deal if you're Catholic. I mean, a lot of people did make the pilgrimage to go listen to him at National Stadium or Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Or he was, you know, it was covered live. There were 9,000 people at the White House when he landed.
Yeah.
For his opening day ceremonies there.
And to cite another person, did you see John Stewart a couple nights ago? I thought it was funny.
He
goes, Bush is picking this guy up at the airport. I mean, how busy is he?
I know.
And then they had a little picture of him with the sign that says Pope. In the waiting room. That was really funny.
That's cute.
So, from the Pope on to disturbing news. This is just shocks me. And I know that there's got to be some numbers problem, but did you see this? It was in the Dallas Morning News, but it's really kind of a national news as well. 17 of the nation's 50 largest cities had high school graduation rates lower than 50%. Lower than 50%. The lowest graduation rates reported were in Detroit, Indianapolis, and Cleveland.
Hmm.
Now, the report also found that half of the students served by public school systems in the nation's largest cities received diplomas. Only 50% are graduating. Students in suburban and rural public high schools were more likely to graduate. But this is nationwide, about 70%. Now, this is rural and suburban and everything. Graduate on time with a regular diploma. And about 1.2 million students drop out annually. The completion rates here in North Texas are lower than the national average. Arlington, which is a suburb in between Dallas and Fort Worth, I think it's probably our biggest suburb, and for all practical purposes, it's kind of its own city.
It's where the new Texas Stadium is being built.
A lot of range in demographics there, but their rate is for completion is less than 63%. Fort Worth is at 56, and Dallas 44%.
Wow.
Now, the Dallas Independent School District's officials, they violently disagreed with the numbers. And here, while acknowledging they have a dropout problem, they were saying the most recent data we have indicates that we have a 7% dropout problem. All right, so 7% versus 56?
Who's
WTF? What the heck is going on there?
Who's doing the math there?
There's
somebody who dropped out?
Yeah, there's got to be some digging. Now, just today I saw a somewhat unrelated that when you came in, that's what I was kind of scribbling down. Just some demographics about our teachers here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
More than one quarter of Texas teachers today moonlight to make ends meet.
Wow.
Typically that moonlighting is about 12 extra hours. 44% of all public school teachers are thinking about leaving. 21. This is kind of amazing. 42% of the people cited the number one reason, not salary, but poor working conditions. 21% cited low salary. Now the average, sort of the demographic median teacher, if you will, is a 44-year-old female. She makes $47,500 a year. She is the primary breadwinner.
Breadwinner.
And she typically puts in $719 a year of her own money to buy school supplies.
Basic supplies, sometimes like paper.
And puts in an extra 13.4 hours per week on their job. Now, that doesn't surprise me. My dad was a school teacher all his career. And I remember Dad every night shutting off the den, getting in the den and working. You know, he was very...
Maybe he was just telling you he was working and he wanted to get away from you.
Yeah, he was in the computer looking up downloading porn, probably. Because that was before the days of downloading porn. No, he was a very good school teacher. He was so diligent about making new lesson plans and of course, a lot of grading papers and so forth. So this really disturbs me. 8 years of President Bush and great promise of everybody you would talk to. It seems to me, we're in an election season now, would say educating our kids is probably one of the most important things we can do. And look at the results. And this can't be more important. And this can't be more of a failing grade on a scorecard for public education.
Well, they actually, 25 years ago, the report was done and it said that the best way out of poverty was to keep kids in school. And we've talked about that before, too.
Yeah.
And it's clear, you drop out. The average college grad makes, 25% more than somebody with just a high school diploma? And I don't know what the difference is between high school diploma and no high school diploma.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's definitely a focal point for the Democrats. They're talking about it.
I think
about education.
I think... that, for those people listening to the podcast, we need to tell our politicians, we need change. We are going to be a second world country in no time if this continues,
That is true.
Unacceptable. We have absolutely every reason to do so much better.
And you know what else was disturbing? Speaking of disturbing, we want to just do disturbing. Remember seeing the video? This happened.
Disturbing.
That's right. This was the group of eight teenagers in Florida who lured their so-called friend to a house and then attacked her and videotaped it for the sole purpose of posting it online.
Oh, I know. I don't think I heard about that. I was thinking about something similar.
They beat another teen in an animalistic attack in Florida, and then they've been all over the news, and then Dr. Phil supposedly paid the bail for the ringleader of $30,000 because she didn't have the money, and then he had to say, no, we overstepped our boundaries. We really didn't do that. The 16-year-old victim was hit on the head several times. Her head slammed into the wall and knocked her unconscious. According to the arrest report, it was an absolute animalistic attack. Each of the eight defendants were held on $30,000 bail. They're going to be charged as adults, not juveniles. And so the question was, is YouTube or any of the online service providers exempt from anything having to do with this? They say that their policy is they remove anything that shows anybody getting hurt, attacked, or humiliated. They probably are exempt from a 1996 law that says they're not considered publishers simply if they retransmit information. So it was a really awful attack. It's been played again and again. They got the publicity they wanted, but it was also the evidence that the police needed to completely arrest them. They had two boys stand guard outside the door of the house to make sure nobody came in, and then six girls attacked this one other girl for supposedly posting nasty things about them online.
Wow.
And then I just heard today, this is what's...
Did you see the YouTube?
No, it never got to YouTube.
Okay.
It was, as far as I know, it was confiscated as evidence because this girl was pretty badly wounded.
Now, see, that's the most surprising thing of the story, that it didn't get leaked out.
It didn't get leaked out. But then today, I just heard there was a copycat one. That's what was even more frightening, isn't it? In Kentucky, even younger girls did the exact same thing to one of their friends, and it was a copycat video doing the exact same thing.
Wow.
that's just awful.
So, amazing.
Yeah. And so a lot of the psychologists were saying, you know, do these people even know the difference between right and wrong? Or they just want their 15 seconds of fame. Mm-hmm. That was very sad. Or maybe these are the high school dropouts.
Yeah, well, no doubt about that. It's not the smartest people of our society.
Oh, my God.
Well, I have something that we've been kind of talking about a little bit is the marketing of water. And I just got a real a real quick blurb on that here because I thought this was kind of funny. There's a new product out called, company is called Big Heads. They're launching VIB, Vacation in a Bottle. And here's the kind of the press release. It's a revolutionary new beverage that is unlike any other drink on the market today. Vacation in a Bottle is the world's first line of relaxation drinks, helping to calm the senses, distress the mind, and balance the body. VIB's unique recipe combines nutrients, antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals to naturally relax the mind and body, providing a state of relaxation and stress-free relief. It's a sparkling tropical blend of pomegranate and berries, caffeine-free, low in carbs and calories, vitamin-enriched, blah, 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 blah. So it's vitamin water.
Yeah.
It's Vacation in a Bottle. Now, this was in a blog that I read, and the commentator to the blog said, me, I bet the whole Vacation in a Bottle concept works better if you mix it with vodka. I mean, how the marketing of water will not cease.
Well, and the flip side of that, this week is Earth Day. You know, and
this week is a day.
This week,
I'm
that
confused.
One day, the 22nd.
Wow, Gretchen's collapsing time. She's changing my whole perception of reality.
Okay, so here comes Earth Day. But speaking of bottles, do you know what's floating in the Pacific Ocean?
Oh, I saw this. Talk about that. Yes.
Is this awful? Again, another disturbing story.
Go ahead and yes.
A giant field of plastic trash twice the size of the continental United States is floating in the Pacific Ocean between the West Coast and Japan.
Now, see, I heard it was the size of Texas. You've heard
twice the size of the continental United States. Mm-hmm. And it's been measured many times now between the year 2000 and 2007. They keep going back to measure it. One of the boats that measured it. It's completely glassy. The wind barely blows. The current flows clockwise, and the ocean's undisturbed. And it looks very peaceful until you get up close and you realize it's a giant garbage flow, twice the size of the continental United States. When the ship first founded in 2000, it took them 10 miles before they were able to pass it and leave it behind. They had to sail for 10 miles.
And what I understand is this is kind of natural phenomena that you know, people throw their stuff in the ocean, obviously, and it gets to this place,
right?
Because of the
streams, rivers, beaches, and boats,
the way the current goes,
right.
Yeah, and it gets stuck there. Now I wonder if you could like get up and walk on it.
I don't think it's that thick, but it's a dangerous chemicals from industrial waste such as PCPs to the chemicals are ingested, and they also cause a lot of problems for birds and marine life, and that translates into us because we go up the food chain.
Right.
But one of the things one of the outcomes is that plastic bags are being targeted. China is going to outlaw them starting June 1st. Australia is planning to phase them out. San Francisco has already phased them out. Whole Foods is going to discontinue use of them come Earth Day.
So we started at continents. Now we're going to retailers.
Oh, yeah, right down,
went down the whole chain.
I know there wasn't a really good transition. Okay. So it's a worldwide problem. But the other target is plastic bottles. They're being targeted. So Chicago's going to become the first major city to put a 5-cent tax on bottled water to emphasize recycling of these bottles. Because what's floating in this giant mound in the ocean are wrappers from potato chips, food wrappers, plastic water bottles, styrofoam, and these the thin plastic garbage bags.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is. And I heard this on NPR, and I meant to take a mental note of digging up the article too, but you beat me to it.
I think that's my job.
That's your job. You're on it. Spot plastic continent watcher. But I think the plastic is a fairly stable thing, but it is decomposing very, very slowly, and they're just not sure exactly of the consequence of that. And you said the obvious one is PCBs.
PCBs, yeah. And Canada is looking to ban some forms of plastic too, because they're unsure about the safety, especially in baby bottles.
See, I think in 50 years this thing will be so big and it'll get thicker. It'll be a start to be like a vacation wonderland.
made up of those vacation in a bottle of bottles.
Take your, yeah, a little, really, to take it a little more literally.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm going to keep on the depressing. I do have some good things coming up, but here's some more depressing things. This is a guy named Paul Farrell from Market Watch, and he came, thanks to my friend Lindsay for emailing this. He's always a good watchdog. 9 reasons your taxes are going up, no matter what the politicians say right now. Of course, no politician wants to say this, you know? But reason number one, and probably the biggest reason, is most Americans have yet to feel any of the cost of the Iraq War. The price in blood has been paid by members of the volunteer military. The price in treasure has been financed entirely by borrowing. Taxes have not been paid, have been raised for this war. So basically saying no matter who's elected, taxes will increase to cover massive debts that's been a result of borrowing for this war.
Military spendings are number one expense.
Yeah, and not only that, he's making the point here, but we've been even misled by Washington's, he's editorializing here, Washington's Enron-style accounting that hides a lot of the costs. And we hear numbers being cited, but there's a lot hidden. For example, supplemental financing bills outside the budget. No veterans' health care estimates have ever been included. No equipment replacement costs to restore our military.
I talked about that with that book last time.
Yeah. Nothing about increases in state and homeland security.
And taking care of the vets when they come home.
Yeah.
The cost of their medical care.
Right. So the cost really isn't $800 billion. It's already $3 trillion. And it still doesn't include interest on the ever-increasing $9.3 trillion federal debt, damage to our credibility from a weak dollar, out-of-control inflation, and the brutal damage to Iraq and other Gulf states. Washington is hiding this stuff. We are a solid war on the cheap. We were sold war on the cheap to cost about $50 to $60 billion to be self-financed out of oil revenues. Today, we're spending $50 billion every single month. So that's the number one reason our taxes are going up. Number two, America's new Wall Street welfare program. For the first time in almost a century, the Fed's bailing out of the investment bankers whose wild speculators got us into this mess. They bailed out they bailed out the investment bankers, but 2 million homeowners are facing foreclosures and increasing interest rates. Number three, the Fed's nationalizing American financial industry. As Bear Stearns is a symptom of this. As Business Week puts it, financiers preached the free market gospel and pocketed unheard sums of money. Yet when times got tough, what did they do? They called for a government bailout. Number three reason taxes are going up, huge resistance to cutting social and entitlement programs. And I don't necessarily disagree with this one, but I do think it needs to be managed probably better. Lobbyists like AARP will fight back cutbacks in Medicare and Social Security, even though those unfunded benefits will balloon to $50 to $65 trillion within one generation. Economists say this problem needs to be fixed. Potentially 40% in benefits or tax increases of 40%. If we don't, entitlements will consume the entire budget within one generation.
By the time we get there, there'll be no money if it continues like it is.
Yeah. And you know I think I've cited this before. I can't remember my solution to Social Security. I don't know about Medicare, but my solution to Social Security is have it balance every single year. Pay in equals pay out. And yes, that means sometimes that our Social Security taxes will go up and down depending on the demographics of who's retired and who's not. But I think it should be that simple. America's pork barrel lobbying machine. That happens all the time. White House's free market non-action policies, basically saying the Treasury and the Fed are following the same playbook that pushed the 70s economy into a long, deep recession. PIMCO's Bill Gross says we need an aggressive Rooseveltian fiscal package. Number seven, aging infrastructure. While we're fighting and putting all this money abroad, we're not fixing the stuff
that
here.
Aren't the talking about that.
Roads, bridges, water, sewers, basic
did
stuff.
Did you see the debates this week?
Yeah, I did.
I fell asleep
after the first hour because
it is kind of
I literally did. I didn't see the second hour because it was all about preachers and
bitter and
I couldn't stand it.
But they did talk about this.
Oh,
they
did
are
they?
Talking about putting jobs, financing jobs to rebuild our infrastructure and to take seriously, solar energy.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, number eight, and this kind of goes into what you were talking about. There's been a paradigm shift in this country from consumer spending, from consumer saving to consumer spending. In one generation, we talked about this before on the show, our savings rate declined below zero.
Yes, we save nothing.
Policymakers favored a consumer-driven economy, capital formation fell, and debt piled up. Meanwhile, consumers took a cue from an out-of-control spending by our government piling up huge deficits. Look at our government's response to everything. Spend. You just need to spend. Spend our way out of 9/11. Spend our way out of the recession. It is a paradigm
shift.
Spend
our way in Iraq.
Can you imagine our parents or our grandparents, a generation or two generation, mm-hmm. talking about spending as the way to live a good right. and fulfilling life?
Right. No, it wouldn't have happened.
No.
Who wrote this?
A guy from Market Watch.
Market Watch. Okay, so he is an analyst.
He's an analyst, yeah. Mm. And I was trying to think, I detect a little bit of a sort of a conservative bias, but there's some liberalism sprinkled in here too. So it seems fairly balanced.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah,
taxes will be, once we get down to the Democrat and the Republican running against each other, taxes are going to be a big platform. But how can they all say they're not going to raise taxes?
No, they absolutely can't.
I'd rather say raise them because we are going to have to pay for this huge debt.
Nobody wants to say that is the problem.
And just remember, 8 years ago, there was a budget surplus. That's what's so
frightening. Well, I was just thinking about this the other day. It's like, you know, are you better off today? No.
Well, here's the answer. And not speaking of that.
Okay, well, but let me just one more thing. I definitely not. Now, whether this is just my own personal career and life or my own personal circumstances, I definitely did better under Clinton or under Democrats than Republicans. Now, maybe others could counter that they've done differently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But how, and of course,
you don't
conservatives,
think it's just the regular business cycle?
It might just be. I don't know. So I'm not going to say that as my proving that Democratic economic policy is better. I don't know. But I have done better.
Didn't things go pretty well under Reagan?
Let's see. Reagan was in the 80s. Yeah.
We were probably
I did pretty well. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was at the start of my career and all that. So
Things are different as you get older.
Yeah, things are a little bit. They slow down a little bit.
Right. But talking about that, two polls this week have come out to say Americans are just gloomy and that they are not better off than they were 5 years ago. The majority of middle-class Americans say they are not. And 75% of people had to make sacrifices last year alone just to make ends meet. A third of people in the United States are worried that their jobs are in danger.
Yeah.
So their biggest financial concern, almost 40% of people are concerned about the price of fuel, 16% saving for retirement, 14% the cost of health insurance, and 13% making a mortgage payment. What people are sacrificing, 68% vacation plans, next dining out, and home improvements, going to the movies and buying designer clothes.
Yeah.
This is the part that talk about savings. Do you save money each pay period, or are you living paycheck to paycheck? 43% have nothing left for saving after meeting their expenses. 37% save a small amount. 14% save a significant amount. 6% spend more than they make. So altogether, that's about 50% either spend more or have nothing.
Right.
That's frightening.
That's huge.
That's pretty frightening.
And that doesn't include how many of those people are actually, you know, on the balance books, their personal balance books in red.
Right. Right. And then the big rebate check that everybody's talking about that's supposed to stimulate the economy.
Which I don't get.
I don't get it either.
I was really, really amazed by
that. But they're coming in May, aren't they?
I thought it was June.
All right. Well, May or June, I thought they're coming in. Some people are saying if you take them to the store and trade them in for a gift card, you'll get 10% more. Have you heard that?
No.
Some stores are saying.
Trade them in for gift cards.
Into a store for that gift card, you'll get 10% higher value by spending all your check at that store.
That's pretty good marketing.
Yeah. But what most people are going to do with that tax rebate check, 41% say they're going to pay off debt, 19% are going to save it, 17% are going to spend it on ordinary expenses, and 7% are going to treat themselves.
That actually surprises me. I kind of was thinking a larger percentage would treat themselves for some reason.
Well, I think things are a little harder.
Yeah,
harder than we thought.
That may be a real sign of the times right there.
Right. Are you concerned you might lose your job? About a third of the people are somewhat concerned or very concerned they're going to lose their job. Which of the following professionals deserve a pay raise? What you're talking about, 41% said teachers, 32% said military. Do you agree or disagree that the presidential candidate's top concern should be the economy? 93% say it should be the economy. And within the past year, has your household's financial situation gotten worse or stayed the same or improved? 40% said stayed the same. 40% said gotten worse.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of gloomy out there. Kind of gloomy. It's kind of a gloomy podcast.
And it starts with educating our people.
It certainly does. Depression is searching my soul. I know what I want, but I just don't know how to go about getting it. Feeling sweet.
passion is capturing my soul.
So here's some good news, though.
Oh, okay.
American Airlines canceled 1,000 flights 2 weeks ago.
Yes, they did.
Woohoo. 100,000 customers, they estimate, were impacted.
Did you get the letter from the spokesperson explaining what happened? Because you're an American Airlines rewards member.
Yeah, I may have not read it. I can't remember.
No, I read it. It was long and drawn out. And, oh, we're very, very sorry that we inconvenienced you. That was the gist of it.
Yeah. Well, the spokesman, Mr. Gardner, I thought this is the interesting quote.
He lives in Plano, by the way.
Oh, he does? Yeah. He said the FAA, well, I'm sure because it's their headquarters
right,
there.
Right.
He said the FAA is scrutinizing airline compliance with airworthiness directives more closely than in the past. And once it was made clear that American was not in compliance, they had no choice but to ground the airplanes. Now, when the planes were grounded 2 weeks ago, American officials believe there is a certain amount of latitude in how the work can be implemented. But it was made clear recently that that was not the case. So what he's saying is it's more, they're scrutinizing it more closely than in the past, which kind of implies that this would not have, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But also that this would not have disrupted the airline. They wouldn't have fixed this problem before, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Is it a problem or is it not? These things are precariously close to the fuel tanks.
And I talked to one mechanic for American, and you know what he said?
Yeah.
He works out of love. He said he never had any overtime for this. They could have done all these planes at night and not convenienced anybody because they don't fly at night.
Right.
For the most part, the whole fleet is down, or a lot of the fleet is down at night, and they could have done it. But no, they didn't want to go that route. So he was never even asked to go fix these, and he's a longtime mechanic.
Did you say he worked out of love?
He works out of love.
Not for money?
Love field.
For love?
Love field, as opposed to DFW.
And I know.
They were doing the repairs at DFW.
That sounds funny. He works out of love.
And I also heard they were outsourced. The repairs were outsourced.
Well, I can understand outsourcing the repairs in the sense of trying to get so much repairs done in a small amount of time. Mm-hmm. No one has the capacity to do that.
But don't you think they should have thought about just doing it in the evening?
Absolutely.
But that, don't you think that would have been a really smart move?
Wouldn't that cost overtime money?
Yeah, so I was thinking that was overtime,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have grounded all those people.
So is it better to ground the people or is it better to have overtime money? I'm sure that the number crunchers.
The productivity, though, I heard it was tens of millions of dollars that was lost, and that doesn't even count the productivity.
Yeah.
That was just what they're going to see in their balance sheet, tens of millions of dollars lost.
Wow.
And did you hear what's going on with Southwest now? Because Southwest is sort of what sparked that, the $10 million fine at Southwest. Four passengers have filed a lawsuit against Southwest saying the company broke its contract with travelers by carrying them on planes that missed safety inspections over a period of 6 years. Class action status is what they're seeking, saying breach of contract, unjust enrichment, negligent and reckless operation of an aircraft. This would affect anybody who flew on Southwest planes from January 2002 to last month.
Oh, I've done that. I'm getting on board, right. Baby.
They're seeking reimbursement for tickets for those flights on the
heck
grounds
yeah.
that the Dallas-based airline did not comply with government regulations and did not honor its contract. They cite the contract of carriage. You know all that crap that we never read on the ticket?
Right.
Well, some lawyers actually read it, which was very good. And they said that all transportation is sold and all carriage is performed subject to compliance with all applicable laws and government regulations, including those of the U.S. Department of Transportation, the FAA, and the Transportation Security Administration. So there it is on the ticket that it says that they're selling the ticket based on the fact that they comply with the laws.
Wow.
But then they've clearly admitted in court that they didn't comply with the laws.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see. It was 60,000 flights in 2006 and 2007 used 46 planes that missed inspection.
So how can you find out if you were on one of those planes?
I think they're right now trying to figure out if they're going to get class action status.
Yeah.
They filed it in Birmingham in federal court a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure that they'll identify us who have.
So I guess it's a fair lawsuit, fair class action if they're against the law. Here's the problem with it. Airlines don't have money.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's not like suing the tobacco companies in a class action where they have lots of money.
Southwest is actually the most profitable of them.
But even they are, mm-hmm. it's not. The balance is not good. Airlines run on very, very small profit margins. It's just
and all the ticket prices are up because of fuel costs.
So do you want to do a class action and bankrupt Southwest, or is it better just not?
No.
You know, I don't know.
That's a good point. I don't want to bankrupt them.
Yeah, I don't want to bankrupt them
because actually
either.
They're less expensive now to take Southwest than to drive. in a lot of cases in Texas and local
within right absolutely. Well, I thought this was interesting. You talk about passenger safety versus dollars.
Yes.
Did you see this? 6 United States cities have found that they tamper with their traffic cameras. Okay. And they do this at the cost of safety for revenue. So what happens is, what the 6 cities do is they shorten the yellow cycle below what is actually allowed by law and intersections equipped with cameras so that they can catch red light runners.
That's really amazing.
The cities cited.
So you run more red lights because the yellow is shorter.
It's shorter. The cities in question are Union City, California. I don't know where that is. Dallas. And Lubbock. Nashville, Chattanooga, Springfield, Missouri. Now, here's what's interesting about it. The city's second highest revenue producing camera is in Dallas. Guess where it is? It's Greenville and Mockingbird. It's very, very close to where I live. For those in Dallas, you probably know where that is.
I just came through that intersection, actually.
Yes, I'll bet you did.
I hope it wasn't green.
Was it a pretty, short yellow signal? So they issued 9,407 tickets worth $705,000 between January 1st and August 31st of last year. At the intersection on Greenville Avenue, get this, leading up to the cameras intersection. So those are the, you know, if you go north from me on Greenville and you have a few traffic lights, those yellows are at least 3.5 or 4 seconds in duration. But the ticket producing intersections at Mockingbird and Greenville's yellow just is at 3.15 seconds. So that is 0.35 seconds shorter than the Texas Department of Transportation recommends as their bare minimum. At 30 miles per hour, if your yellow time was less than 3.5 seconds, you would not be giving that driver enough time to react and brake and stop. And as it turns out that a small change in signal timing can make a big change in revenue.
Wow, that's amazing.
So this is what the Texas Department of Transportation found. They found that shorter yellows generate a 110% jump in the number of tickets, but at the cost of safety, increasing a yellow 1 second above the recommended minimum cuts crashes by 40%.
Holy cow.
So there you go. That is a direct implication. You know, the traffic engineers studied numbers and made policy.
Yep.
They made a trade-off between safety and revenue. And I understand how policymakers have to make these really difficult things, but what I can understand is how they intentionally went below the legally mandated minimum for the light. Why would anybody make an unethical decision like that? How can you get away with that?
Is someone going to sue?
It doesn't say in this article.
We should send it to that Southwest lawyer.
Yeah.
That guy who's filing that class action lawsuit.
I know.
So take a look at this. Because this probably affects you on a more regular basis. I mean,
I avoid that intersection. What I do is I go up Matilda because the intersection is just a horrible, it's not so much the yellow, it's just a, if you're going to go Greenville and then turn on Mockingbird, it's just a unfavorable light. You know how you learn in life to avoid your unfavorable lights and get around them?
But you didn't realize why it was so unfavorable.
No, I did not.
But now you know.
Yeah.
Wow. That's something else. Did you know what Oliver Stone is up to?
I'm probably making a movie.
He's making a movie about George W. Bush.
Is he really?
Yeah, you know, the Bushes are moving back to Dallas when they're out of the White House. You got
that? That's an article. And I'll just say one thing about that. The house often cited that they're going to move into is literally 2 blocks from where I commute and literally about 2.5 miles from where I live. I told that to somebody at work and they said, oh my gosh. You have where ex-presidents lives are really, really controlled areas from an input-output.
So we're going to be majorly inconvenienced because
I don't know how much we're going to be, but definitely, in my commute I might be, but definitely his neighbors are going to be majorly, this is not a good thing.
The Secret Service is out scouting locations is what I heard.
Yeah.
And they keep looking at certain properties in Highland Park.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know they had narrowed it down to one.
This is just a speculator speculating that this property is for sale. It's huge.
Yes, it's right off that. It's off of Preston, isn't it?
This one is actually off Lakeview. You know, right where Turtle Creek, that little lake is,
one of those huge
houses. Uh-huh. There's a big lot there. And
wow. Well, we love the Bushes coming to Dallas, but I just thought there's...
So basically, I'll probably see him at the Starbucks there at Highland Village.
Yes, you probably
Highland
will.
Highland Park Village, right?
Yeah, right. Oh my God.
He and Shaney. And I'll go up to him and say, hey guys.
Wow. Well, Oliver Stone's movie, it's starting to shoot. It's going to be called W. And he wants to have it out before, by November, before the election.
Okay.
And it's going to be very controversial, like his previous films about John Kennedy and Richard Nixon. Josh Brolin is playing Bush. Elizabeth Banks is playing Laura Bush. James Cromwell is playing Senior Bush. And Ellen Burstyn is playing Barbara Bush.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that great?
Wow.
And there are parts of it that are they're taking some liberties. They're filming in Shreveport, Louisiana. And it'll be out before the November election. So some of it is accurate, but some of it is not. The premise is that Bush is obsessed with baseball, Saddam Hussein, and the conflicted relationship with his father. And he's also given to colorful language. And everybody who knows him says that's accurate.
Wow.
And there's a scene where inebriated young Bush crashes the family car and challenges his father to a fist fight. That is true.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And there is suggestion in the movie that Vice President Cheney and political advisor Rove manipulated Bush's political judgments, and that's
Can I tell you something? I was listening to Terry Gross Fresh Air this week, and she had on, I wish I could remember the ex-senator. He was a Republican senator from Rhode Island, Chaffee. Last name was Chaffee. That basically was fairly moderate, and he voted actually against a lot of things that Bush proposed. But he gets in there and they had like five or six group of moderate Republicans when Bush was elected 8 years ago. It was a meeting with Cheney on the day after the courts decided that it was going to be Bush. Uh-huh. And so they met with Cheney, and Cheney said, went through all this list of stuff that they were going to do. And it was very divisive and very tough and very against what the campaign said. The campaign said, I don't know if you remember this, that Bush said, we're going to have a very gentle foreign policy. We believe that the best way to get is to get along in the world, you know? And everything that Cheney said was against what promises they had made, and it was extremely divisive. And he came out of that meeting saying, basically disillusioned, and also saying, you know,
We've been bilked,
but not only that, but this guy, he's a vice president.
And
obviously the power is shifted in this relationship. So
have you watched the John Adams series on HBO at all?
I actually was going to talk a little bit about it.
Because
I love it.
Because at the very beginning, the vice president had no power. He sat and oversaw the debate in the Senate. He had no voice at all unless
so
he was a tiebreaker. And he was incredibly frustrated. And they got the vote. Did you see who was he? The vice president was chosen by getting the second number of votes, which was really interesting.
And they brought that up in the debate.
That was very fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did.
Okay, well, let's continue with the theme.
How about something fun? No?
Oh, this is fun.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. California faces an almost certain risk of being rocked by a strong earthquake by 2037, scientists said.
Oh, that's not fun.
I know.
Especially because the Midwest just had one and they know nothing about that fault.
I know.
They know very little.
New calculations reveal there's a 99.7% chance of a magnitude 6.7 quake or larger will strike in the next 30 years. Now, the odds are higher in Southern California than Northern California. Wow. That's all. That's a little blurb I thought was interesting.
It was
going to happen.
It was very scary to live there and know that.
Really?
Because I lived there for 15 years. And, man, I had my earthquake supply kit. I had a gas wrench to turn off the gas. I mean, you had to be prepared because you knew it was coming. And after you lived through a bunch of little ones, you're like, wow.
Wow.
It would be awful to be in a big one. That's for sure.
All right. I'm going to transition to some good stuff.
Okay.
Okay. This is actually seriously good. Dallas. Dallas is changing in the next year or so in a lot of ways. Let me go through some of these things. First of all, We are getting the new Texas Stadium, as we talked a little bit about before.
Looks like AT&T is in the lead to get the name.
Oh, goody, goody. Cannot wait to call it AT&T Stadium. And by the way, a little side note on that, the Mitsubishi Electric Diamond Vision Scoreboards, who I should say in fairness is paying for supporting the podcast. Not. they are building the largest ever high def for the scoreboards. And the width of that is 159 foot and the height is 71 foot. And there'll be four of them.
Oh my God.
These are, you know, 1080p, whatever that means. I just know it's high def. The weight of the screen is 170,000 pounds.
Wow.
And again, multiply that by four.
Wow.
So, we have that. And then we have the Dallas Center of Performing Arts opening next year.
Right.
So this is the last season of the Cowboys in Texas Stadium. It's the last season of the Dallas Opera at the Opera. It's the last season of the Dallas Theater Center, which is the best theater in town, at the a beautiful theater that's was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, his only theater.
Right.
That's moving. These buildings will still be used, but that's moving to the new DTC, which is kind of Dallas's version of Lincoln Center. Mm-hmm. It'll have a lot of different spaces for different things. And that's all very exciting. And there's one thing I didn't even know about. You probably didn't know about it either. We have a new Trinity River Audubon Center opening up this year, scheduled to open later on in 2008. Let me tell you a little bit about this place. It's down the Trinity River in South Dallas area. I read this in a blog where the blog writer went with the mayor to kind of tour the facility. It's kind of a PR thing. She was thoroughly impressed.
Wow.
It's $11.8 million. And it's 21,000 square foot facility located on 120, it doesn't say what, I guess that's a reclaimed acres of land in the southernmost section of the Trinity River Corridor. And she said it's a knockout building. 50% of the space is devoted to educational wing with two labs and three classrooms. The architectural design mimics a bird with outstretched wings rising into flight, and the windows are sloped at 12 to 20 degree angles to avoid the reflection of the sky and keep birds from flying into the glass. Here's a look at it.
Wow.
That's kind of what it looks like. Wow. did you guys out in Radio Land enjoy like that?
It does look like a bird.
And here's what I'm kind of excited about. It's a very educational, eco-friendly facility. There will be miles of hiking trails, and they'll be part of winding through grasslands, woodlands, and wetlands. And it's scheduled to open very soon, so it's exciting.
Where the bike lane is going to be? That's what they were talking about? The bike lane?
The bike line?
Bike lane.
I don't know.
I thought there was going to be a bike lane, but that, maybe not. I've not heard of that building.
That I'm not sure.
Interesting.
So that's fun stuff, right?
Yeah, that is fun.
Okay. See?
Okay, I can top that. This is more fun.
Oh, good.
Okay. What do you think the worst 50 songs have been in the past whenever?
I hope none of mine.
The worst 50 songs ever. Blender Magazine has ranked them, and it's coming out next week. The number one stinker song ever written is the Starship's 1985 We Built This City song. Isn't that great?
It's such a stupid song.
I totally agree with that.
But I listen to my 70s station, and because I like it, you know, it's all campy stuff from when I was a kid, and boy, there's a lot of shitty songs written then. Because I write songs, and things that I would be so embarrassed to put on paper. Recently, they've been playing Seasons in the Sun a lot. So stupid. And I remember that when I was a kid. That was number one for a while.
Long time,
it's
right.
The stupidest song.
So everything, right, name some more. Everything on this list had to be a hit, right? So,
right.
Second worst song, Achy Breaky Heart from 1992, Billy Ray Cyrus.
Wow.
Number three, I don't know if I agree with this one. Everybody Have Fun Tonight, Wang Chung, 1986.
Yeah, you know, that's just
that was
a fun party song.
That
yeah,
was just a party
that,
song.
That doesn't belong there. It's Wang Chung Tonight is probably what got it into the top list.
That's right.
Everybody Wang Chung Tonight. That's stupid.
That's very self.
That was a fun song.
Right. Roland from Limp Bizkit in 2000. I'm not sure I remember that.
I'm not sure if I remember that either. But Limp Bizkit's pretty good. I mean, that's kind of serious, hardcore music.
Right.
I can't imagine it'd be the worst song. It's not. Well, anyway.
Oh, here comes Vanilla Ice with Ice Ice Baby from 1990.
But even that had a pretty darn good beat, but stupid.
Okay, I agree with number six, The Heart of Rock and Roll
from still
Huey
beating.
Lewis. 1984. Oh, my God. I don't know if I agree with this one. Don't Worry, Be Happy, Bobby McFerrin from 1988.
There's a lot of people that really thought that song was dumb. It definitely got overplayed when it came out, and I got kind of sick of it, but I thought it was all right.
Yeah, Party All the Time, Eddie Murphy, 1985.
Yeah, actually, not a bad song, but yeah, stupid.
Ebony and Ivory, Paul McCartney,
that
Stevie
is really
Wonder.
Bad.
That was a bad one.
I was just having a
that
conversation a with a friend of mine about Stevie Wonder, because uh-huh. she loves Stevie Wonder. And I'll acknowledge the guy is talented, and I just like so much his early stuff, but his later stuff is like, I just called it, I love you, and Ebony and Ivory, and crap like that. I think it's horrible. Horrible. She did not agree.
Oh, well, they did not include songs such as the Macarena or Who Let the Dogs Out, which were designed to be cheesy.
Yeah,
they let those
true.
On because they knew that they were there.
How about Afternoon Delight?
That's a good one. What was that Chipmunk song? The one about the Chipmunks in Love, Captain and Tennille?
Oh, my
Wasn't
God. Yes, Muskrats in Love. Now, I just cannot imagine any professional taking pencil to pen and saying, Muskrats in Love.
Well, the most controversial one is Simon and Garfunkel's The Sounds of Silence.
It really? Is, yeah. No, those are, Simon and Garfunkel is very, very good.
Well, what they really objected to was self-important lyrics like, hear my words that I might teach you. It's a parody of pretentious 60s folk rock. They said,
yeah.
They said, if Fraser Crane wrote a song, this would be it. Okay.
Well, that sounds like more about the listener. I think they tried different things. They were very good, I think. I thought, anyways. Well, I got a little study that shows some guy, San Diego political science professor James Fowler, has his little 15 minutes of fame. He did a study that kind of looked at, is there any truth to the Colbert bump? Or is there any truthiness to it?
Yes.
And he found yes, but not really for Republicans. He found it for Democrats, that the Democrat candidates who showed up earned about 40% more in campaign donations than the counterparts who were not on the show.
That's
pretty significant.
Do people know what we're talking about? The Stephen Colbert Report?
The Colbert Report. Oh, maybe
yeah,
not.
Yeah.
Report, yeah. He always makes fun of the fact that he's got the Colbert bump.
One of the most influential people, so maybe that's true.
Well, I'll tell you, did you see Thursday night's show? We had Obama, because he was in Philadelphia in preparation for the primary next week. And
uh-huh.
So he had Obama over the link,
uh-huh.
and Hillary actually came on the show and did a little kind of goofy comedy thing. It was funny. And so, I mean, he's getting the important people on the show,
wow.
You know?
Well, here's something silly, too. Do you own a pair of Crocs?
No. Well, they're shoes or sandals
are, right?
Or something.
Those are those plastic shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That slip on.
That's right.
Right. And now people decorate them. The little kids decorate them.
Right.
Do you like them? Have you, you've seen them, right? They come
in all
colors.
Yeah, I don't have an opinion on them, I guess.
They come in all
colors. I've never tried them.
I think they're probably one of the ugliest things I've ever seen. But
are they for beach wearing? Like,
no, they're people wear them all the time. It's just sort of a...
I guess I just don't know that much about them.
I can see why they probably appeal to kids. They're easy to put on and they're colorful. But
colorful.
I mean, come on, adult men wearing them.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Yeah.
Sales of shares of Crocs plummeted 40% Tuesday after the company lowered earning forecast amid sluggish sales, which prompted analysts to wonder if consumers are tiring of the colorful plastic clogs.
Do they cite a reason? Is it just sort of the trend is done, maybe?
Yeah, I think the trend is done. They were so but ugly. Oh, my God. So poor Crocs is going to have to close the manufacturing plant, eliminating 600 jobs and reduce discretionary spending.
Oh, boy.
And now analysts are citing significant mismanagement of expenses to be that far off in their sales forecast.
Really?
Yeah. It's a six-year-old company, and they had a proprietary closed-cell resin material that they made these plastic shoes out of. So
yeah.
I think Crocs may be biting it.
So
they're going to be vintage and they'll probably be on eBay.
Yeah, and vintage will show up in a few years. Talking about vintage, did you see that vinyl albums now?
Oh, they're starting to make a comeback, aren't they?
Starting to make a comeback. Realistically, record executives know that they'll never, you know, equal CDs or downloads, but they're becoming... They're retro, and they're appealing to the younger kids.
Are they made now any more scratch-resistant than they have been?
Not that I've seen, but here are the reasons that they say you should consider buying them. Sound quality is better. They exhibit a warmer, more nuanced sound than CDs and digital downloads. Most things sound better on vinyl, even with some crackles and pops and hisses.
Huh.
The album covers, which I have always loved as a kid, of course, uh-huh. you know, the large things. Now, I don't want them anymore, to be honest, because I don't want to clutter my house oh, with yeah. them. But when I was a kid, I did love the larger size. You get these cool liner notes. Sometimes you get a poster. And they're making the actual vinyl now more colorful with like prints and things like that. So kind of making it funner. The third reason that they cited is social experience. People, I think this is kids, not really adults, crowding around a record player to listen to a new album and even getting up and flipping it over and stuff. It's sort of more of a communal way of listening to music. Now, a lot of the record companies are producing the albums for sale, and they're also slipping in iTunes coupons uh-huh. to download the music. So you can have the best of both worlds. Great sound when you're at home,
uh-huh.
and you know the portability that everybody wants.
Yeah. Interesting.
That is very interesting, mm-hmm. you know?
I saw a band was on The Tonight Show, and he held up the album and said, this is their new album, not CD, album. and it was pretty amazing to see it.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, look at that. I haven't
Apparently,
seen those in years.
Amazon.com just started a new vinyl store.
Wow.
Yeah, new vinyl store.
Wow. Hey, so what do you think about the polygamists? I don't
yeah,
think we can end without talking
about
it. No,
I was just going to say the same thing. We can't not talk about it.
They are just... Isn't it like watching a train wreck?
Well, I applied for my, you know, to get entrance into it.
I mean, you can have three wives?
Wherever there's three 12-year-old wives, I'm in.
So you can go from zero to three. They are so attractive. Have you seen the unibrow woman? She's the one who did the tour.
No, actually, I haven't seen anybody.
I think her
anybody.
Name is Marilyn. You know, she took us inside the ranch on CNN. She took them inside and... she had the really high hair, and apparently that's a status symbol. The higher the hair and the longer the hair, it means they're higher up in the echelon.
But what's higher? They just wear it high?
Oh, they wear it way high in their forehead. Oh. I mean, they all have the same attractive style. And then they braid their hair. Yeah, and they braid them. And the dress color, I didn't realize that, but the dress color means it identifies what part of the family they're from. So they wear similar dress colors if they're all, you know, that same sister wife family.
So what's
member.
The appeal for a woman to get into something
I
like
this? I don't
think
it's the choice, actually. I was hearing that they were sort of born into it and their mothers were in it. And when you're born into it and it's this, you know,
but that
insulated
assumes,
society,
that
you
assumes,
stay in it.
Right. That it's, assumes, though, it's been
generations.
Kind of like Amish
right.
In the sense that it's really hard to leave the fold because you have people watching out for you there. But
right.
that, like I said, that assumes that it's been around for generations. Is that?
Well, that's what I was looking into, that it's sort of plural marriage is based on the teachings of Joseph Smith, who founded the Mormon Church. But then the Mormons sort of got wise, and they realized that in 1904, they excommunicated anybody in a plural marriage because they wanted to get into the statehood for Utah, and Utah
right,
wouldn't let them in
right,
as a state.
Right.
So any Mormon in good standing with the LDS Church cannot has to eschew polygamy in earthly practice, but maybe they recognize it as part of a divine principle that applies once you're in heaven. In the early 1900s, though, polygamous Mormons who didn't believe that that a man could revoke the order of God went off and founded their own little sects, and that's how they ended up in these weird kind of off the
okay.
beaten path places.
Okay. Yep.
So then there were schisms among all these little multiple sects, including
right.
the FLDS. Right. And so they've sort of been flourishing since the 1900s, and they estimate their numbers at like between 6,000 and 10,000, but they don't want to be counted, so it's really just all an estimate.
Right.
Right. So their idea
and
is...
And this polygamous camp is part of the whole Warren Jeffs...
Yes.
...affiliated yeah. somehow with his deal, right?
Right. He is the prophet. A single man leads the church, and it's always a male prophet, and he has the divine revelations from God, and...
So is all this really about God, or is it about sex? Is it about horny men?
It's interesting, isn't it? Isn't it interesting?
And it's
all sort of shrouded under their, you know, rights to worship as they please. Polygamy is ordained by God and brings blessings and sanctity to its practitioners. That's what the FLDS members believe. First wives are taken legally with a marriage license, and then the other ones are spiritual unions, and they call them sister wives. But this is the part that I heard that was really disturbing, is that the sister wives are all on welfare and receive food stamps.
Ooh.
That's the part that just makes you want to die, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is that, because don't you wonder where their money comes from?
Right.
You know, because they did this tour of the ranch. You know, you see they do bake bread. It's totally living in a communal, you know, they all eat together at long tables. They have play the piano. Their living room has just like 50 chairs in it and a piano. And I saw one computer. So they do have computers. They have cell phones. They have minivans. But I thought it was interesting that that could very well be true, that we... that they're on welfare, so we're subsidizing them.
We're subsidizing,
and then they cast out the boys. You've heard about the Lost Boys, that once they reach adolescence, there are not enough wives to go around, so the boys have to be pushed out.
And
so,
what happens to them?
They flounder, and they're called the Lost Boys, and there's been lots and lots of articles and TV shows about them.
Wow.
And they don't know how to live because they've never lived outside of the sex. So there's a lot of drugs, and they have a lot of problems assimilating into society.
Well.
They don't do well.
Sure.
I saw an interview with one who's in construction, and he's sort of living at sort of a halfway house or sort of apartment complex with other Lost Boys. But it's hard. I mean, so when you think about this, God, you know, it's been going on for years. And in the 50s, 1953, the government swept into Short Creek and they took 236 kids. Adults were arrested, families fled. It was unexpected results. They actually gained strength and sympathy, the group did at that point, because they didn't think that what the government did was right. So don't know if what the government did was right here, but, you know, just because they're different, you know, under
they went in, and I haven't followed it that closely, but they went in presumably because a woman was calling, and a girl was calling and saying she was abused.
Right, she was abused. She was forced to marry a 50-year-old man, but they've never found her, and they, of course, the sect is saying there's nobody by that name here. But they all have the same name, which is interesting. It's Jessup, Jeffs, Johnson, or Steed. Those are their most common names. So now the court's ordered DNA testing for all of them so they can determine who's with whom.
Wow.
Whose parents are whose and whose sister is who, because they change their story. They don't know their names. They won't divulge their names. They're not allowed to talk about anything.
Wow.
So it's just so odd to think that in this day and age, that's how people live. But, you know, it is religious choice, and they say they're a peaceful people and they're not doing anything wrong, except they do acknowledge that the girls get married at ages younger than certain states allow. They have literally acknowledged that.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would you have a bed in your temple? I do think that's a little unusual.
I still think it's about sexual.
It's
more
pretty,
than it is about religion.
And they do say that the men abuse the women and the children.
Yeah.
And the men direct everything.
Right.
And, so we'll see what happens. But it's pretty daunting to think if Texas is going to end up with 416 kids that have to be put in foster care. That they're not going to do well.
But they'll enjoy those wonderful schools of ours.
Yes, and then they can drop out.
They can drop out.
They can join the dropout, right?
Well, we're just about nearing the end of our program today, but I did want to talk very briefly about the John Adams. Have you been watching it?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
so
I didn't see the last episode. Don't tell me what happened.
Okay, I won't say anything. Well, you can go to Wikipedia and kind of get the storyline, but I won't say anything. But again, I talked about this 2 or 3 years ago. I said how popular, or how I would, at least I selfishly would enjoy some sort of real drama about our founding fathers.
Mm-hmm. They're fascinating.
And I love this. I love it so much. And I know I'm probably, I look at Thomas Jefferson and I just am fascinated. You know, what a quiet, unassuming, but smart guy.
He's brilliant.
And John Adams, what a... interesting and complex, so
and
good and
Abigail.
So tough. And
Abigail was pretty much of,
and so right, and she was really neat person. And but here's the thing: they're portrayed as, and Ben Franklin and all these people that you just hear about, Alexander Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a lot of Wikipedia, like what happened to Hamilton and Burr. Mm-hmm. What does that do all about? I haven't seen that yet, but so it's sparking a lot of interest in the Founding Fathers for me.
And the Federalists versus the Republicans.
Absolutely.
That was interesting. You could see why the states' rights versus a federal government and how hard it would have been to create it.
Right.
If you've been in that building in Philadelphia, you know how little it is and how stifling it was, because all the windows were nailed shut.
Right.
And there was no air conditioning, and they wore wool.
Right.
And no wonder it was divisive. No wonder they couldn't get an agreement.
Yeah, no kidding. And George Washington just... it was so interesting seeing...
Wasn't that guy good? That guy is...
It's David Morris.
So like him.
Oh, my gosh.
My God, yeah. It's an excellent show.
It's so phenomenal. But it made me think. It made me think that these people pretty much were regular people. I mean, regular, smart, you know, people.
Educated.
Very smart
well
people.
Educated.
But they were just like anybody else. But here's the deal, and this is what made me think. It's like, we know these people so well, Hamilton and Jefferson and Franklin, they're on our freaking money, right?
Right.
You know, and we know these people so well, and Washington, obviously. We know these people so well, and why? Because they were the smartest people ever to inhabit this country? No, but because they're at the beginning. Because they're at the beginning, they had so much impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, what if somebody like George Bush or Bill Clinton was in our first, presidents, they're in a first cabinet, they would have a much wider influence on this country than the current president does, of course.
Had we lost the war, we'd be very British, we'd be a British colony.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting, I shouldn't give this away, but I will, because it doesn't detract from anything, mm-hmm. but when Adams was president, he did struggle with the exact same thing that Bush is struggling, a lot of presidents have struggled with, and that is, in times of war, or potential war, how much personal liberties do you give up? So interesting to see that issue was out there 200 then, plus years ago.
Right. Or when the French minister came to town and said, why aren't you supporting our cause because we helped you?
Yeah.
You know? Or the Dutch wouldn't lend them money at the beginning because they didn't have any collateral.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought it was written. Well, David McCullough is an amazing writer. And his book has been on the bestseller list now. It's glad that, you know, people are actually reading historical. Yeah.
And I love the fact that John Adams is not portrayed as all good. He's a rough personality in some ways, especially vis-a-vis his kids.
He didn't exactly.
He's not exactly
the
most charming.
Court.
He's not a winning, charming guy. He's not. And
Ben Franklin, on the other hand, no wonder he was never president.
Right.
Or in. Yeah. You know, no wonder. Yeah. I mean, he was so unusual.
He was so unusual.
Yeah.
But again, Ben Franklin, he's an unusual character, but at the time he was there, he provided a vital function. And that was this huge link for France, and he played a big part in the Constitutional Congress.
And very creating, good negotiator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He brought sides together.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I often wondered that too. What if the people were different, the players were different at them? You know, we'd be very different.
They had a big, big influence.
Uh-huh. And Washington pushed for federalism.
Yeah.
He was trying very hard to get it. Because he was the first one to say, well, if people died in Massachusetts, I mean, we have to, they might as well have hurt Virginians if they hurt Massachusetts.
Right, right, you know? Exactly.
So he was the first one to speak up and say, we are all one.
And that's what's really interesting, because that also all these things are just, I love watching this show because it just makes me think. It's like at the time, especially pre-revolution, should we have one militia for everybody? That's so weird. You know, there was all these independent states.
And they struggled with how to pay for it. How do you pay for it, right?
And that was that's why Hamilton's on money now, because Hamilton is the one that came up, what was very controversial at the time. You saw the episode when he said, we got to go in debt. We got to start a national bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to finance debt. And that is the way that we're going to grow. And that's the way we're going to create foreign trade, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I read in Wikipedia later, the impact of Hamilton was, after Hamilton died, people went the other way with that whole thing. But at the turn of this century, with Teddy Roosevelt and so forth,
mm-hmm.
Hamilton historically had a comeback.
Wow.
And
interesting.
Yeah, it is very, very interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is a way to make history interesting. That's what I think is so, you know, people don't study history, but when it's well done like this, it's fascinating.
So we're almost towards the end of that series, but I'm sure that there's a way, you know, to see it again. If you haven't seen it, it's probably either on repeats or at the store. I want to see more. I just want to see more. I want to see Jefferson. I want to see even you get into these other presidents, James Madison, Andrew Jackson.
Uh-huh.
I want the same thing. You know, they don't have to be presidents, because I want to see all about the Western expansion. I want to see it all.
Of course,
hooked.
Lincoln is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
During he lives, made some of the toughest decisions ever.
Yeah. And I don't care if it's centered around a president, but centered around a time and interesting issues. I love finding out what all the political issues were at these times and how they dealt with it.
Did you see him in the open air cafe? It was like his version of Starbucks.
Yes.
With the goats going by in
exactly.
the background. I thought that was
exactly.
great.
Exactly. They spent a lot of time outside socializing.
Yeah, drinking cognac?
Yep. Yeah, smoking cigars. Yep. And, you know, it wasn't a horrible, you know, meager, horrible life sometimes.
But they were also the very well-educated.
For these well-educated
and the
ones,
wealthiest.
Yeah. Right.
We are seeing the wealthiest.
What I thought was amazing. Okay, so here is Adams. He's president. And I don't think this is the last. I don't know if this is one you've seen or not, but he's walking with Jefferson as vice president, and they're having a tough debate because they're separate. You know, they were separating, and I read in Wikipedia later that they had this complex relationship. They really liked each other a lot, but they had a breaking point, and then they got back toward, you know, as they neared death and so forth.
I think Abigail liked him too.
And Abigail was always the glue between them, and I think Abigail did kind of like him.
She kind of liked him. Ooh, he's handsome.
Yeah. But here they are walking and having this debate, the president and the vice president. They're just walking through town.
Can you imagine? No Secret Service. No Popemobile.
And I don't even know if people maybe recognized them.
That's
You know, how would they know?
Because newspapers were just getting...
They didn't have cameras.
Right. Oh, yeah, no cameras.
There's no photographs.
Oh, but didn't they do portraits?
I'm sure they did portraits.
They had portraits,
yeah.
Because remember the one scene they had... But Franklin was getting his portrait done.
Right, they did. And then in the White House in the episode you haven't seen, when Adams moves in, there's a portrait of Washington that we all know there. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
And his teeth did hurt. That was a fact.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Well, yeah, it's good. So we recommend it. It's probably going to win awards. It's been very well done. It's a Tom Hanks production company.
Oh, right? Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I'm loving it. And we got to go.
All right.
Our cuppeth is runneth over, as we say in colonial times.
Happy Earth Day. It's coming up.
All right. Get out there and buy some Vacation in a Bottle.
That's right. And some plastic bags.
Yeah.
All right. Not.
Bye.
Bye.